If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Red Bull Power Pains, that provided by Engine Mode 11 on Twitter, and runner-up from Richard Burrows was Red Bull Power Flames. That's two puns, see? I'm not anti-pun, but I am your host, Richard Spanners Ready. Welcome to the Australian Race Review. Bleary-eyed Europeans set alarms and dripped coffee into their veins while Americans stoically chugged Budweiser into the night to watch F1's return to Australia. And I spent the night on the sofa in an attempt to avoid my spouse's early morning wrath, and then my 5 a.m. buzzer buzzed, and I thought, this had better be brilliant. And you know what? For an Albert Park race, it was pretty good. Let's explore why. So, coming up, we'll ask, Albert Park, interesting Grand Prix or street procession saved by safety cars? We'll ask, are the Ferraris on a path to glory? And can Red Bull keep the wheels on their wagon? Have Mercedes damage limited enough? And did Pirelli get the tyre selection wrong? And I'll ask, are you fed up of F1's billionaire club? We're an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. Because I can't shake him, I'm joined, as I so often am, by Matt Two Rumpets.
I'm currently practicing holding my breath for the entirety of my upcoming 8-hour transatlantic flight. I'm convinced this is possible.
You can't get away with catching COVID coming to Britain, and you sound all rough and sexy voice-wise already. We're joined by Christian Pedersen. Hello, Christian.
Good evening. I'm happy we had a good race today, because we better get to see any of the front runners on the main feed. So
at least there was racing down the pack. And we're also joined recently from trackside by Jonathan Simone. Hello, Jono.
Yes, it was great to be at the track. A good 4 hours sleep a night for about 4 nights straight. I can't get my voice ready for this one. We're going to try and last 90 minutes to 2 hours. Let's see how we go.
Shouting in support of Daniel Ricciardo, no doubt.
No, definitely not. Look, well done to him. Great job. But, you know, I'm there for Hamilton all the way, supporting him, doing his best job. So that's who I'm with.
Okay. And that's my job here as host, to collect Hamilton fans from around the world. No, that was not the aim at all. But let's just talk about what we thought of the race. And right up front, I just want to clarify something for those who might have started watching recently and haven't seen many Australian Grand Prix, or more specifically, Albert Park Grand Prix. This has never been a representative track, which is why I never liked it as the season opener, Jono. And I don't want that. I don't mean that to be sort of anti-Australian in any way, but it's always thrown up weird results. So in a way, I think it's much better placed as race three to give us something different to look at. But with all the tracks coming up, there's loads of different tracks as well. So this has just added to not really knowing exactly where the order is.
That's true, but also I personally enjoy it as round number one. Not in terms of the racing, but just in terms of the atmosphere and capturing Formula One for that first round as a flyaway. Holding the race in April is very, very weird. Luckily, we got the best of the weather because I know today, like it's 5 a.m. here where we've already got rain. It's pretty much going to rain all day. We just missed that by about 24 hours, 17, 16 degrees Celsius. Terrible weather. And you see, this is the downside of holding Melbourne as the third race. But you're right. You know what? Great track, great atmosphere. At least it's back on the calendar.
See, Matt, so just because Haas were rubbish here doesn't mean I was actually right in my pre-season predictions. But it also doesn't mean McLaren have recovered either. So, you know, I just want to caution people to kind of just hold back a little bit from drawing wild conclusions whilst we spend the next hour drawing wild conclusions.
Oh, well, wild conclusions are what we live for. But yeah, you'd be correct to not write Haas off after a single bad race where one of their two drivers was sick for a big chunk of practice. And McLaren themselves have said that they feel like their form is very track specific. And I would just put it to you that the upcoming race at Imola might see some revision in that order.
Christian.
Don't forget that Haas usually do pretty well at the old Australian track. Remember both Kevin and Romain, they were like fourth or fifth when they both did pit errors a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So normally the old Australian track would suit the Haas car. Today, I wouldn't say it suited the Haas car. So something's different on the Haas car, definitely. Or the track has changed.
But Christian, while we're with you, it was kind of like an old-style classic Grand Prix today. It feels like the regulations, what they did with the track, what they eventually settled on with the DRS, it all combined to be good for an Albert Park race, but it definitely had a feel of like an early 2000s race.
Definitely. I think first of all, the fact that we see grass makes it old school in our minds.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
I love the fact that both Steins and was it Kevin who did a turn nine grass trip? And it actually took Sainz out the grass. So the grass does one thing. The fact that it's Melbourne, you have all these people there invading the track, it also makes it a bit more old schoolish. I don't think in per se the track is old school in its layout form. It's very similar to other tracks in a lot of. It doesn't have anything that stands out. So,
yeah,
I mean,
what it didn't have was cars getting stuck. And I think in the last two races we've seen the DRS really dominating and making it what it's all about. Whereas here, I didn't quite get that sense. The odd DRS pass, Jono, was overpowered into turn three, but generally you had cars being able to race.
This is the type of racing, personally, I enjoy. Not too easy, not too hard, bit of everything, great battles. We had a train, you know, we had people forcing each other wide, all this argy-bargy, but remember 2 weeks ago, we spoke in the race review about how we thought DRS was too easy. You know, some of the battles weren't as, they were modern day type of battles. Yeah. These are the type of old school battles we got, but we got them in quantity now. We didn't get them in the, you know, quantity about 15 years ago where it was two overtakes a race.
Yeah. So this makes me hopeful for maybe Barcelona can produce a race at least as good as this. Maybe Hungaroring will produce a better race than it might normally deliver. But anyway, let's get to this race and where the race was won and lost. Well, I think, Matt, we have to focus at the front and the Ferraris. And what you'd said to me pre-show was where you pointed out basically the comment where Ferrari, who looked like they had dominated, and Leclerc, who looked like he was chomping at the bit to go faster and faster and faster, were managing the pace.
Yeah, he almost gave his pit wall a stroke when he's like, can I come in and get soft tires? And they're like, you already have fast lap, and there's no one faster than you on track now.
Can we risk another pit stop? Can we finish third and fourth as well? No! Calm down, Charles! Everything's going well.
Take deep breaths, my friend. Yeah, no, I think the race weekend was over as soon as Ferrari unpacked their car, quite frankly. They were on it from a setup point of view. They had the pace. Even in quali, where Red Bull was quicker looking until Verstappen couldn't keep it quite on track, those times, and Alonso looked quicker, but he couldn't keep it on track. I mean, there's a certain thing to keeping it on track and then being very, very fast in the race, and Ferrari seemed to have absolutely dialed that in.
One thing I've noticed about this season so far, and I hope this continues, is that qualifying doesn't always give you now the best indication of how things are going to shake out in a race. You can see teams either set up for one or another. It reminds me of 2013, when the Mercedes were like on pole by like 8-9 seconds sometimes, but then it would just disappear and teams stopped trying to qualify on pole. So we might see a little bit of that coming up this season. But I think it was interesting, Matt, that as soon as we got into that stint one, with Verstappen behind, and you go, oh, he's just holding 1 second. Oh, that's 2 seconds now. Oh, no, he's not holding at all. He cannot keep up. And it's scary to think if that was Ferrari in cruise mode even then. But it could just be as well that Red Bull just weren't dealing with the tyres well.
Yeah, well, I think there was a comment from Perez afterwards that the setup they chose was very hard on the tyres. And the removal of that first part of the second DRS zone, so there were two in the front, two in the back. The removal of the first one in the back, I think, really disadvantaged some of the teams, especially the teams that chose lower downforce setups. And Red Bull would definitely be one of those.
Okay.
So I was at the track this weekend. And when you actually walk to that new section where they canceled the corner, they pretty much just straight line it now. It's not really a straight. And so when I saw them add that as a DRS zone in the track details, I thought, wow, like that can't be a DRS zone. There's no way you're going to turn, you're going to crash into the wall. And obviously they've removed it for safety reasons, and I agree with them. It was not a straight.
So what would it have done? What would we have seen if they had, apart from the crashes, what would we have seen if they'd have kept that fourth zone?
Well, I think you would have seen a lot more overtaking and swapping back and forth between the back straights and the front straights. But specifically, the reason why I think the high downforce teams were advantaged by it is because they have a higher apex speed and exit. So they would have been using less of their energy, their electrical energy, to accelerate into that first part of the DRS zone and been saving it for the second part of that zone. Whereas if I'm a low downforce team, I need to make up that time as quickly as possible. So I'm spending all my energy coming out of that corner trying to catch. But now I have extra drag. And about the time I catch up to them, my high downforce team is now running their battery and just getting away from me.
I think
it was a real challenge for the teams to figure that out at the last second.
I apologize to anyone who's struggling to concentrate on what Matt is saying when his voice just sounds like that. I'm hypnotized. This is ridiculous. Christian.
I mean, we did see a DRS train at the, was it around like lap 40 or something, when Alonso and Magnussen had to do their pit stop. And if we see a DRS train with three DRS zones, I mean, just a train of cars where the leading one just won't let anyone pass. I think four DRS zones would be maybe just making it a bit too, not trustworthy somehow. And I'm not saying we should go away with the DRS or anything like that, but I don't think we should forget that no one understands the tires yet. And I know it's early about the tires and stuff like that, and we're talking about something else, but tires still plays a big part. So Ferrari's saying the tires were just perfect. That is, I think, the most unsettling part about this entire race, not the DRS zones.
You know what would have solved the DRS trains? We spoke about this 2 weeks ago. The push-to-pass thing, where you have a limited amount of DRS usage, and now you don't have... By the way, at the track, I don't even know who it was, but there were like six cars stuck in a train at the end of the race. Was that the Bottas sort of train with Zoe and everybody else?
Stroll,
yeah, like you don't have that anymore, because now they're not all trapped behind Mr. Stroll.
Yeah, but so... But there was room for racing, and I think there was a particular set of circumstances that led to Stroll being there and holding everybody up. But let's focus on Ferrari at the moment, because I think we've all used similar terms like scary, frightening, alarming. They were obviously ahead in Bahrain. They were right in the mix, but probably the second best combination in Saudi Arabia. But here, my goodness, there was really no doubt, and I don't think it is... raw pace. I think the tyres and how they were able to interact with it played a huge part. But go on, Matt.
No, I was going to say, because Red Bull did have graining. In fact, we saw in the Perez-Hamilton battle we'll talk about later that Perez just eventually came back to Hamilton as his tires went off. So Red Bull really did struggle with tires today.
Yeah, it still looks ominous. But when you've got a team like that that nails together a weekend, and it is going to fluctuate from weekend to weekend, obviously the driver-teammate battle comes into a sharp focus. So that's where I want to go next. Without doubt, Charles Leclerc seemed to just pull off a perfect race weekend. That kind of weekend when you see someone pick up a title, a Vettel or Hamilton, a Verstappen, just going out there and getting the result when you have the dominant car. Last season, we kind of saw two teams. We saw Verstappen and Hamilton going through phases with the dominant car. You have to still go and collect it. And if you go to 2017, 2018, when Vettel had those periods where he had a chance to go away and disappear, you know, he wasn't delivering. So having the best car isn't a nailed on world championship or a nailed on championship lead. But Leclerc was devastatingly consistent, Matt, and it must have hurt Carlos Sainz. In fact, you could see it hurt Carlos Sainz. Mediocre weekends so far. I'm sure you're going to put a load of mitigating circumstances at me. I'm sure you are. But there is a trend starting to emerge, and it is not in Carlos Sainz's favor.
Well, I would, of course, argue that the Melbourne result is a lot more of an outlier than the first two results. He had a load of hampering, including bad luck in quali with the red flags,
yep,
where he lost his first lap in Q3. He had an engine issue for his second run, meaning he didn't get out on time.
Jono's not loving this.
Run.
Yeah, go on.
And then he had also a steering wheel issue at the start of today's race, where they had to actually replace his wheel with 1 minute left before the formation lap. Now, I think the thing with Carlos, too, is these cars are very different to the previous season's cars. And I wouldn't argue if you said Leclerc adapted better. He absolutely has adapted better to these cars. But it was a step backwards for Carlos this weekend and when he could least afford it. And I would agree with you there.
So let's add two more excuses, because I had two more things. Anti-stall off the line as well, which is why he went from like 9th to 14th straight away. And because of the bad luck in qualifying, he then got put on the alternate strategy of having the hards, which have looked at, actually, they've looked a nightmare when cold all season long so far. So being on those hards obviously then led to his incident, where, I mean, that's worth exploring that now. Basically, he came out from behind a car, the car then looked unsettled, lost the back a little bit, ended up on the grass, and then really was out of control by the time he came back on track. So really lucky not to just collect another car, because we've seen those go wrong. But when me and Matt were listing those racing driver mitigations, both Jono and Christian seemed to be disagreeing. So Jono.
Okay. Spanners, remember last year, you and I were on the camp of Leclerc was by far way better than Carlos Sainz last year, and we were with pitchforks chased at the top, like at my front of my house. I could not go shopping for a few weeks. No, that did not happen.
No, but it was. But it was you and me versus all this lot, all versus Matt and all the rest of them.
So last year, now don't get me wrong, Carlos Sainz, obviously he's great and he's a good talent and all this kind of stuff. But Leclerc last year, if you just look at why Sainz outscored him, you saw that Leclerc was the better driver, and it's proven itself this year. Yeah, the cars are different. Yeah, there's different changes. But you know, a performance like this today, do you really get that out of a world champion for someone? Yeah, he's had a poor start. Yeah, he got bad luck in qualifying. But then to overcook it and lose himself mentally, you just don't get that, you know, at the start of a race from a guy who's going to win a world championship, really.
I know Matt wants to come back in, but man bun first.
Christian has to say, Sainz needs to hit like a hard wall to get to the bottom to be able to rebuild and refocus and really do it. And if anyone can do it, I'm sure it's Carlos Sainz Jr., because he's an excellent driver. Actually, I put my money on him last year, but this year, seeing what Charles Leclerc is doing in that Ferrari, you have Formula One, the front leading teams, you have the back grid, and then you have Leclerc. He's basically in a league of his own. Maybe you see Verstappen's challenging him, but Max Verstappen, he is considered the world's best driver. So, I mean, I think we're just seeing the package just coming together with Charles Leclerc and Ferrari.
All right, citation.
You should be afraid.
No, I'm not going to bite. I'm not going to bite. Matt?
Well, I would simply say that the difference between last year and this year with regards to the Ferrari car is that Leclerc has the margin he needs to be able to drive like that. Last season, it made him inconsistent. This season, he has the performance advantage and can use it in a way he couldn't last season. And I think that does put signs at a disadvantage, because when you're talking about getting out to the very edge of the envelope, I think Leclerc is going to be your guy.
But I tell you what, Matt, you know, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm anti-Carlos Sainz in any way. That is a very high bar for Leclerc. So, for example, when people are getting excited about, I don't know, George Russell, for example, up against Stroll. Was he against Stroll for a bit and then against Latifi? Was it Latifi the whole time? And then Kubica as well. Or Schumacher against Mazepin. You go, that's not a very high bar to compare yourself to. But Leclerc isn't looking good against some mug. He's looking good against Carlos Sainz Jr., which is putting into context probably how good the start for this season is.
Yeah, it absolutely is, because Sainz is one of the best and most adaptable talents on the grid, as we've seen him do pretty well against every other highly rated driver he's been up against.
Okay, so look, before this becomes a Charles Leclerc love-in, was he first in Bahrain, second in Saudi, first here, dominantly so as well? Is there any chinks in the armour at the moment? Well, I thought that his mental approach and his kind of self-deprecating, attacking himself might be something that holds him back. But so far, we're not seeing any sign of it at all. Jono?
And I think they got the quickest car too. So he's got that bonus, you know, three fastest laps as well, don't forget. So he's on 71 points, not 68. You're right about the self-deprecation thing. Mm. I think sometimes it's good to be hard on yourself, and he knows how to handle himself best mentally. But now he's grown out of it. He's matured. He's getting older. He's getting better. He's getting more confident. Things are becoming second nature to this guy mentally in this sport. And I think you're looking right now, and I know it's very early to call because this could be a 2009-like season, he's definitely favourite for the World Championship. You got to say.
Oh, right easily. Now. Absolutely. Yeah. And whilst we're still expecting, we'll talk about Mercedes and Red Bull's troubles, I'm still expecting those to be ironed out and for them to be very strong. But I would take the 40-point lead right now, or whatever he's got, on George Russell. He's got a 40-point lead over the third or fourth fastest car. So I would take that. I'd be looking at the gap back to Verstappen in sixth place if I was Charles Leclerc at the moment. And that's looking incredibly healthy as well. But Rob Asher just said, if anyone's season can rally, it's Carlos Sainz. And that's in our Patreon live chat. Hello, Patreon live chat. Thank you for your support. The hope I would try and take away, not try and take away, is that Ferrari have history in backing a horse, in backing one of their team. And I think already, if you're Ferrari team management and you're not as good at developing in season historically as Red Bull and Mercedes, you're going to start pouring resources at one car. And I feel like Carlos Sainz might already have missed that boat. Too dramatic, Matt?
It's a little early yet because there's so many points left on the board. But I would say that if we get to summertime and it's still looking like this, then you're going to increasingly see the car go the direction Leclerc wants it to go.
All right. Any more on Ferrari? I mean, it was such a dominant performance. It's almost hard to add to it, isn't it? Jono?
Well, the gap is 34 points between him and Russell. Now, if he sat out the next two races, would he still lead the world championship? Because I'm thinking like, all right, maybe Sainz, does he win both races? He hasn't been the number one driver. Verstappen's had him most races, you know, so maybe Verstappen picks up a couple wins. Imagine if Leclerc sat out Imola, sat out the race after, and he'd still lead the world championship. That's how big his lead is. It's possible.
Yep. Christian.
I might be repeating myself just a tiny bit, but during the pre-race show, Alexander Albon and Lando Norris was joined in an interview and had like a bit of chatter, really entertaining, by the way. But Albon just looked into the camera because he did 56 laps on the Haas, right? He looked into the camera and said, everyone's lost. No one knows the tires. No one knows what to do on their out laps, he said. So if this is true, and this is how the drivers talk to each other among each other, they tell them maybe not into details, but everyone's just relating their experiences on the tires. And if that is the mantra, and Ferrari can do this 20-second lead after two safety cars, and on the radio go, tires were perfect. I mean, that is the key, I think.
Yeah, well, that was Leclerc's quote after the race. We had no graining. And that would make them probably about the only team that did. And just to make it a little bit more piquant, supposedly they've not really turned their power unit up yet.
Oh, don't. No, that's gross. Stop it.
Stop it, Matt. You can't
say
that.
Yeah, enough. That's enough. Come on. Look,
we have to end this Ferrari segment.
Also, yeah, like a trigger warning before you get before you're going to say things like that. But let's look ahead at the calendar. You know, we're just talking about, you know, has Leclerc sewn it up? You know, we've handed him the title. So Imola is like a more of an old school classic track. I think it will operate very differently to what we saw in Albert Park. And then we go to Miami, which is a complete unknown street circuit. Barcelona, which tends to be a good indicator of who has the kind of best overall package. Then we have the Farce at Monaco, another street circuit at Azerbaijan. And then you've got Canada and then Silverstone. So all the way up to race 10, you're probably going to see flip-flopping if cars are having track-related and track-specific performance. Jono?
So he could literally win Imola, this is Leclerc, and then sit out Miami and just go to the beach. That's one option. He won't do that, obviously. The one thing I'm actually intrigued by, now you mentioned Spain. I know we're looking a bit ahead here, but okay, let's say Ferrari and Red Bull are still the quickest cars come Barcelona. But remember when we sometimes head to Monaco and one team tends to be a surprise over another at Monte Carlo. And I'm thinking with the porpoising issues, is that if Mercedes don't solve them, is that a track they can take out due to the lower speeds? It's
I don't know. Mercedes always seem to just suck at Monaco, and Hamilton as well relative to his teammates, seems to suck at Monaco. So, hey, look, let me deal with Monaco when we get to Monaco. Come on, man, it's May. Give me a chance. Give me some time off. Let's move on down the grid a little bit to Red Bull. Okay, so obviously, where do we start, Matt? Let's start with before the issues, and let's start with Verstappen, because he was still a bit racy against Leclerc. I don't know if ultimately even getting past him, you know, if getting past him, he would have been able to hold that, but initially he was able to go at it.
There was a moment after the safety car restart when Leclerc didn't have his tires fully warmed, and where it looked like Verstappen might be able to get ahead of him. I don't think they had the tire wear today to make that stick, but there definitely would have been a battle as Leclerc tried to retake that position. And as you know, overtaking can be dangerous. So we could have seen a different result, but that's if we ignore the fact that his car didn't actually finish the race, which I think is your bigger problem here.
No, that is the bigger problem. But even before the car went pop, you could see that the performance difference wasn't there. And then there's a distinct, you know, change in tone, I think, between Verstappen last season, where he was the underdog, if you like, coming through and everything was a bonus. Whereas now he's world champion. He's in the top team. He's got the number one on his car. And you can feel a bit of a disappointment and frustration, Christian, when things aren't going well, and you hear the problem starts culminate. If you're out front and you've got a bit of graining, you don't really worry about it too much. When you see the car just getting a dot up ahead, suddenly some left graining becomes like, this is another thing.
I remember we talked about this last time I was on, and there's something about how Max Verstappen drives Charles Leclerc. It's like he's on 90%, whereas last year on Hamilton he was on 110%. And I'm not sure if it has to do with the car, how it drives. It has to do maybe mentally. He knows the Ferrari is just faster. And last year he was of the thinking that the Red Bull was faster. Or if it's how the car, I mean, I can't figure out what it is, but it's like maybe it's the past. Charles Leclerc Verstappen, the recording incident. It was an incident, as Charles Leclerc called it. I can't figure it out, but there's something there.
I think I might put it down a little bit to race direction. We don't know exactly what they've been told, but I think that might be playing a part in it as well. But Jono?
I think that's a part of it, but I also think a lot of people are forgetting, and I should have mentioned this 2 weeks ago, is that he has one world championship now. He's not racing like he has something to prove. Remember back when we were all younger? Well, ironically, I'm still younger.
Yeah, you're like two.
Fight to make it. But like, it might, like, for example, I'm always pushing. I'm trying to make it. Yeah, you're getting more agitated. You're really trying to fight for stuff. Once you achieve something really high, you're comfortable now with your career. Mm. And it doesn't mean you back off or you're complacent. It just means you're able to approach your career more calmly. And maybe that's why he's able to race Leclerc a bit differently, because he has a world championship now. He's not fighting for it anymore.
Well, okay, yes. It doesn't feel like they're fighting for it at the minute, Christian.
Can I make just a short comment on it? Because this is a theory and this is far out and stuff like that. But my theory is the reason why Hamilton is really fast is because in his entire life, the only way he could prove his worth was on the track. So that is what is built into him. For Max Verstappen, the only way he could get love from his dad was by being fast in the, in the go-kart. That is basically what you saw. So when now he's done it. So I have a feeling I'm obviously exaggerating, but but still there's an element of truth to it. So now he's proved it. Now him and his dad, they can basically, it's like they opened the Coke bottle that was shaken and that's how it. I'm not saying he's not thirsty anymore, but I do think that does play a bit of a role.
The image I'm getting in my head is after they won the world championship and he's finally won his father's approval, that Josh just turned to him and just nodded slightly with approval. And that was enough to they knew that they had reached that point in their relationship. But in this race, Matt, in qualifying as well, we're starting to see maybe some of the challenges that Max Verstappen is having to go through. He was struggling in qualifying in that final rear section, where just not being able to get the fronts to bite, and then that's hampering him all down the straight. And we've seen him not dominating Perez in qualifying as well, which I feel is more down to... Well, it's probably a combination of both, but it's more down to Verstappen not being able to get that ultimate edge than Perez suddenly leaping all the way up to his level.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing to note that it's always been said that Verstappen likes a very pointy car, a very sharp front end. And if there's one thing these cars don't have this season, it's that. And he, in fact, trialed a new front wing on Friday that wound up on Perez's car on Saturday because it didn't turn in as well as the old wing, is my assumption. I haven't been able to confirm that because for some reason, Christian Horner not getting back to me.
Okay. But also, you know, Perez is the lead driver now on points. So maybe that's why he got the new front wing and the Verstappen didn't. And don't be reversing that joke when we get to the Mercedes bit. All right. That's coming back at me real fast. But Verstappen obviously still pushing, still finding his way, you know, in this different performing car. So that will be a sign. How well he adapts will be added to his legacy. And they say that they're the best drivers will adapt to whatever car is thrown at them. It's only race three, so probably foolish to bet against Verstappen to find a way to drive around it. Ah, good. We're all betting on Verstappen to find a way around it. That's excellent. But we can get to some of the problems then with the Red Bull powertrain or the fuel line or the whatever. Christian Horner says that these faults they're having, and in my head I'm including Perez locking his rears in Bahrain, Gasly chugging to a halt or being on fire in Bahrain. Didn't Tsunoda also conk out in qualifying at Saudi Arabia? So there's lots and lots of Red Bull power related issues. Christian Horner is saying that they're all different and unrelated. So he's either covering up, see, this is my conspiracy theory, Matt, was that he was covering up that they're doing something spicy and sneaky and it's going wrong and causing lots of problems. So to detract from that, they're saying, oh, no, they're not related. It's all a bunch of different problems. If it genuinely is a bunch of different problems, I think that's worse.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I do think that the problem that Verstappen had in today's race was substantially different to the previous one he had. But just for fun, I'm going to read a list of parts to you.
Okay,
now.
Go on.
Here we go.
Car 1, auxiliary radiator, LHS deflector, fuel cell, loom, clutch actuator, gearbox hydraulic system and actuators, clutch breakout box, parameter changes with clutch actuator, blah, blah. Car 11, auxiliary radiator. The first car I read was what they changed on Verstappen's car in Parc Fermé. The second was what they changed in Checo's car. Now, to me, that suggests that they may not be running the power units entirely the same between the two cars. And if I think about it, on the grid, there's only one other manufacturer that I've seen similar results from, which is two DNFs-ish out of three races.
AlphaTauri.
And that would be Alonso and Ocon at Alpine, where Alonso has had a whole peck of PU problems, and Ocon's had virtually none. So they may not be running the engines the same way. And this may be why we're seeing a more aggressive approach for Verstappen's power unit, because he's chasing Leclerc and they don't quite have the car to do it yet.
It's always been the trend at Red Bull to give to favor Verstappen on new elements. And it's always been the reason why it's been very difficult to judge, like Albon, Gasly and all those. It's always been difficult when we don't know the facts, basically. So no, if you have one car running half a second faster only on aero, it's impossible to judge the driver. So I was imagine if they had to tell us this. I would think that would be a good element. I know they are trying to do something with all the cars being shown in Parc Fermé, and the technical directors have to tell everyone what's new on the cars and stuff like that. But no one's actually doing. I think the only ones who did it at the first race was Mercedes, who got into detail, and everyone was, no, there's a little blue there and a little green there, and that's it. But they have to tell us this, because this is a sport for the fans. It's based on the fans. So if we knew that Verstappen had a car that had a new front wing and new would be easier to judge. But basically, I'm just taking it from
But it's good, because we get to wildly speculate, and then the team people that listen in to podcasts and stuff can laugh at us. So, okay, laugh at this. So there's two competing theories here in our, and we are a bit into conspiracy theory stuff here, Matt. So the one you're positing is the old McLaren 2012. Is Hamilton a car wrecker? Why are all his engines blowing up? Is it a way he pushes the engine? So we're kind of saying, oh, is Verstappen pushing the engine in a special way? Is Alonso wrecking his by doing certain bits and bobs? Well, that seems a little bit far-fetched that you can drive so much in one way that you wreck your power unit parts much more than your teammate. I think the more likely one, and it's still a conspiracy theory, is if we compare it to, say, last season, where I wildly speculated, and I think I'm right, that Mercedes were using George Russell's car to experiment on future engine upgrades or to push it in ways and see is that good enough to go on Hamilton's car. The fault today that Verstappen had, very similar to how Gasly conked out in Bahrain, you know, just pulling over to the side and then it catches fire at the back. So I wonder if they've kind of got using Perez as like the control, and then they're trying things with Verstappen and Gasly.
Yes. Well, I think they would try it with Gasly, think they fixed it, and give it to Verstappen to chase Leclerc and give Perez the more consistent engine, where the parameters aren't as close to what they consider the margins.
Okay. So I think that's pretty much it for Verstappen's race. Just briefly now, just on the teammates here, because if you remember in Bahrain, obviously I'm a Perez fan, so I'll say that and then you can put my comments in context. I don't believe in hiding our biases. I believe in just, pull your pants down and show us everything. So yes, I am a Perez fan. And I think in Bahrain, I saw hope, and it wasn't that I saw anything spectacular. I saw a lack of the things that were holding him back last season. So a lack of the desperation that was causing mistakes, like the sprint race at Silverstone, a lack of the ultimate qualifying pace, and also, just a little bit more, a lack of confidence and just feeling more confident in his own skin. So Bahrain looked really positive. Obviously, the pole at Saudi looked strong all the way through qualifying, until the very end in Q3. But in the race today, once he got past Hamilton, the pace was very good. And obviously, we're in a bit of a tyre-saving management phase where we're there. But he wasn't getting dropped down the grid. He wasn't getting lost in the pack. The persistent fault that frustrates me as a Perez fan reared its head today, which is starting softly, and he backed off an awful lot, because Verstappen really did just cut across his nose and go, hey teammate, nice to see you up here, but if you continue down that path, we're going to crash, and just chopped across him. Perez had to lift off and then let Hamilton by. I think he does tend to lose out on the starts, and that disguised a lot of his pace and potential last season. But I'm seeing things, Jono. I'm seeing that gap close, and as a fan, I'm a little happier.
Definitely. There were, people who associated the previous Red Bull before the rule changes as very difficult to drive. And that's why Perez is maybe finding this one easier to drive and easier to match Verstappen. I do disagree on the fact that, he was running away with it. At one point, the Mercedes caught him at the end of the first stint. Now, I was at the track, so I didn't catch everything, but I'm assuming that's because of tire wear and graining.
Yeah, so,
and
so
Perez
yeah.
was struggling.
But Verstappen and Perez
and Perez
were struggling.
Compared to each other. Yeah, yeah. Yep. In that sense, you know, there's nothing much else to say. You know, Sergio Perez right now is as interesting as a jar of salt, and it's he's just getting the job done, and he's getting his fourth places and his third places.
Well, hang on a minute, he would
if you all could see Spanner's face.
He knew he should have won the last race. He was very unlucky with the safety car.
Should have. Oh, I mean, you never know. Would he have held first place? You know, that's
say
the
yes.
other question.
That's what I'm going to say, John.
Possible.
Matt, they're being mean.
I think they're being a bit mean. The argument about Perez consistency is
feels
held
it.
Up by the fact that he's leading, he's third in the drivers now, behind Russell and Leclerc, of course.
He's second, actually.
Is he second?
No, I think he's third. I think he is third.
Third.
Yes.
Incorrect challenge, Christian. Russell's wait. Second at the moment.
No, Perez is fourth, isn't he? He's on 30 points.
He is fourth. He's fourth, yeah.
Oh, he's Charles behind Perez, Sainz as well.
Russell,
yes,
Sainz,
yeah,
yeah. Perez.
I'm Amazon. Glad we spent all the time sorting that out.
Welcome to reading stuff off the internet with Missed Apex Podcast. Anyway, Matt, continue.
He's doing a really great job. And I think you're correct. He has a confidence now and a comfort that is seeing him quietly challenge Verstappen in a way that doesn't set off any alarm bells, which I think is particularly mature of him. And we certainly have seen him at other teams not be able to deal as easily with it. So it's a sign of how much he has grown and how much of a threat I think he really might be to Verstappen this year, where I still feel like the basic understeery slow speed nature of the cars really suits his driving style better than Verstappen's.
Okay, I'm going to say something in a minute, but here's old misery guts Perez hater Simon to say some more things. Go on.
Okay, he's 5 points ahead of Verstappen, and he has one DNF. Verstappen hasn't finished more races than he has this season, and he's only 5 points behind. So, okay, Perez is good. Let's not trash him too much. But again, why is this a conversation? I know that we're doing this for the podcast, but Verstappen's better. Leave it. We're going to...
revisited. I never said, you know? Perez is an out-and-out better driver or he's going to beat Verstappen. However, a whole lot more positive. Wins are definitely on the table. Podiums are on the table. But if you want to see whether he is winning that career battle to get ahead of Verstappen or equal to Verstappen in the hearts and minds of the team, you want to be the number one driver and getting them behind you, developing for you. When he won in Baku, it was like a funeral at Red Bull, and he's like quietly trying to celebrate and going, oh, such a shame, sorry for everyone, but quietly, like, I won the Grand Prix. Today, again, on the radio, like Matt's saying, he doesn't want to get their attention too much. So he was like, oh, first thing he said, shame for Max, oh, unlucky, but, you know, I got my second. Christian Horner sounded like he was dragged to the team radio. It's worth going and listening. Yeah, well done, good job. Good job, Checo. Second. Yeah, really good. Great. Can I go?
This is true. This is very true. I thought that exact myself.
Yeah. So it's mad. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see if he can stealth his way up the grid a bit. Jono.
It happened, remember, when they won the Drivers' Championship last year, right? Like, nobody cares about the second driver or the team's championship. Like,
no.
Red Bull's celebrating, like, yeah, Max won the championship, and Mercedes are disappointed, and you're like, didn't you just win the constructors?
Yeah,
and you didn't, like, mate. Anyone, all they care about is the number one driver.
Yeah, I agree. The argument over which is more valuable to the team's driver or constructors title was absolutely settled in Abu Dhabi.
It is Red Bull, after all. I mean, that's what they can use marketing wise. I would say it's the world championship.
Oh yeah, having the world champion is way more marketable than being the constructors champion, for sure. Absolutely. Let's move on to the constructors champions, Mercedes. It was slightly better. So what I will say is, in this damage limitation phase of Mercedes season, things are going pretty well. They're having an absolute shocker, an absolute disaster of a season. They're second in the Constructors' Championship. They've eked out results. They've at least been reliable. And I think, Matt, you know, earlier in the show, we were talking about the compromise between, you know, race setup and qualifying. It feels like they sacrificed everything for a bit of race pace, and they weren't bouncing up and down so much. Bit rubbish in quali, but in the race, He went, oh, they sort of came alive. They were fighting the Red Bulls, at least one of them.
Yeah, well, it was surprising, especially because the track was so very hot today. It was a 40C where it had been in the 20s for the qualifying and the practices. And normally Mercedes tend to struggle a bit, but such is the new design of the car that maybe they're going to have an advantage at the hotter tracks. And I think they were much better on the tires. I think when we saw Lewis fall away from Perez early in the race, I think I thought at the time maybe he was backing up to help Russell a little bit out because he was being chased by McLaren with DRS. I'm pretty convinced now he just went through a graining phase. And once he was back on it, he caught up to Perez. And frankly, had the safety car not intervened, I think he'd have been ahead of Perez as well on merit after the first pit stops.
Yeah, I think you might be right. But Christian, before we get to you, I had just a bit of a theory watching them in qualifying. They could not get the tyres switched on just at all. Like they were just doing warm-up lap after warm-up lap after warm-up lap. And that does kind of speak to looking at mid-stint in the races. And like Hamilton looked a bit weaker at the beginning and Perez got past him. And then the race sort of seemed to come to them. So yeah, maybe they really did set up in that kind of way. Christian, then Jono.
I was just going to say the exact same thing because actually when Red Bull's tyres were going off, the Mercedes tyres came alive. And that showed something. But I wanted to add that Mercedes actually run this race with some sensors on you usually don't only use in practice. And they weigh around 1.5 kilo extra weight. And I'm pretty sure Mercedes, one of their main issues is overweight already. So running 1.5 kilos extra for the entire race just to be able to measure stuff, that says a lot about where Mercedes is right now. They are not pretty. I'm sure they're not sure where they are, basically. So they're trying everything. So, I mean, second in constructors, that's pretty damn good.
Along with that, have you noticed how Mercedes are always quicker in the race so far this season?
Yeah,
you know, they're a great race car. They don't set it up for quali. I was very surprised with George Russell saying some BS that they were the fifth fastest car. Mm. I'm like, really? I'm like, how about next press conference just say, I think we're the 10th fastest car and you finish third or something? You know, I feel like they get worse every time they do a press conference, but they get better in results. But they did a tremendous job. Yeah, the Alpines and McLarens were there, but I knew that as soon as the McLarens had qualified ahead of Hamilton and Russell, or at least Norris did, I knew come the race that they were going to finish 30 seconds, 40 seconds ahead. That car is built for the race. They do such a good job on the tires, great drivers. So if you're going to put your money on a poor qualifying performance, great points, put it on Mercedes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Okay, so I just want to say, and this might be wrong, but I don't think this is out of the blue, this favouring of the race pace. I think this might have deep-rooted, you know, almost 8 years back, and we mentioned 2013 before, where they were qualifying like on pole by a second and then doing nothing in the race, and they might have had a schism and a reaction to that that sort of might have sent them the other way a little bit. Obviously, the domination of the early hybrid era might have disguised it, but also Lewis Hamilton's personal approach to a race weekend. He had, and this seems weird to like statistically the most successful qualifier ever, but he lost to Rosberg in 2015 and yet was he lost the qualifying cup when they had a cup, yet he was dominant in the races. And I think Hamilton has long prioritized the race over qualifying. And I think even the race over the starts, which is why we've saw a lot against Bottas, against Vettel, and against Verstappen, a lot of the time it's Hamilton chasing. And we've talked about that first stint, Hamilton chasing and stalking, because he's prioritized that point of the race over other things. But hey, feedback at missedapex.net. Hey, email me. Tell me how right and handsome I am. Christian, then Matt.
Maybe you can answer this one. Maybe Jonathan. There was a radio from Hamilton at the end of the race when he was like, I don't know why you did this to me or something like that. Where did you put me? And yeah, I didn't really understand that. But if you looked at his pace from maybe the last 20 laps, he was consistently 1.2 seconds behind Russell, just outside the DRS range. So something happened there. Maybe it was a team decision to give that to Russell. I'm not saying he could overtake him, but maybe Hamilton was told to stay behind.
I think we're going to that very issue next. But Jonathan, did you have an unrelated point to that?
No, I had related points, two related points. Number one, no, I didn't hear the radio message because I was in the mosh pit of 50,000 people on the main straight, which we'll get to a little bit later. And number two, watching timing the whole race, Hamilton was quicker than Russell. And in the final stint, he was just in that 1.2 to 1.4 second range and could do nothing about it.
Yes. Okay. I think it is worth noting that. And I don't want to take away anything from Russell's first proper podium. I know he had the Spa, the race that wasn't two laps under the safety car. But a great result for Russell. Did luck into it, of course, getting a very cheap pit stop under the safety car. But you're right. I think Hamilton in this race, like in the other two races, just had that little edge over George Russell, which you probably could expect from a seven-time world champion embedded in a team and a new talented driver coming in. So that's nothing against George Russell at all, but a really, really interesting dynamic, because you get to the point where your seven-time world champion is catching your new young star, who you see a lot of future in and you like, and you want to be all teamy about it, but they might still be thinking Hamilton's their guy this year. But in that situation where you didn't expect anything out of this weekend, you're suddenly in third and fourth place. I believe what they said on the radio was basically equivalent to hold station. I know it came out another way. And I also believe that is absolutely the correct choice, Matt. They could not have had their drivers scrapping for third place when they basically had 15 and 12 points out of nowhere that they weren't expecting.
Yeah. So what I love about this is there are three basic ways to look at what happened. Option one is to go with what Mercedes said. Literally, Hamilton had an engine overheating issue or was on the edge of overheating his car.
No, he didn't.
It was told to cool it, i.e. don't pass, don't attack Russell. Another way is, I think also conveniently overlapping way is, well, look at where we are. If we let them race, Russell's tires go off, there's a crash, there's a lot of bad things that can happen here, or we can walk home with the points we currently have in the bag, and I think that's reasonable. And then there's the advanced tinfoil version of, we've decided to favor Russell over Hamilton
because we want
him to have a podium. I don't find that to be the least realistic, but I think what it does set out is what Mercedes has done. If you drew a line that was the maximum points Mercedes might have gotten versus how much they've optimized the points they've gotten, in actuality, the only deviation will be the tricks they tried to play in the qualifying session with Hamilton that saw him not make Q2. Mm. Aside from that, they have maximized the points they are capable of, and there's not really any other team I've seen right now that has done that. And that speaks kind of scarily, if they get on top of their issues, about where they're going to be at the end of the season.
Race scenario: Hamilton is faster than Russell. Russell has burnt up tires defending what was at the time a podium position against Sergio Perez. The team have to come on the radio and say to him, don't fight him, because tire management is going to come into it. Avoiding another pit stop, I think. So lets Perez by, but he's already used up a bit of his tyres by then. Hamilton has got the pace. You can see him closing up to within DRS range. Then all of a sudden, you know, he drops back. The radio message they play is, you put me in a really difficult position here. I think this is code. Mercedes have done it before. The code for hold station has been stay off the curbs, go into a lower engine mode when they were allowed to do that. Engine's down, we're saving the engine. This time it was, oh, you're overheating. We know what that means. It means we're happy with the result. Because then, if Hamilton overtakes George Russell, and yes, he did have a pace advantage, but not enough so that he would just breeze by, it would have been dangerous. If you just say, don't overtake Russell, we're taking the points here, and then he does, that's a big drama in the team. If they say, and that's on the team, if they say you've got cooling issues, don't overtake, we've told both cars to slow down, and Hamilton ignores that and overtakes, what have we got? We've got multi-21. When they were both told, no, both chill out. And Vettel went, nah. And I don't think Hamilton is the one to go, nah. So it was the perfect radio call from Mercedes. And I think, I reckon that's the position they put him in, was by saying, you've both got a cooling thing and you've been told both to slow down. So now his difficult position is, if I overtake, I'm the baddie. That's, Christian, where am I? What do you think? What do you think?
I think you're right. But I do want to add that Hamilton is probably top three best racing drivers ever. And okay, Russell has done three races in his new team and he's second in the championship.
Yeah.
So I think within reason, he might be a bit faster, but Russell is doing a really good job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I think we're all in agreement that over the three race weekends, Hamilton has just, you know, he's just looked like he's still got a little bit of an edge over Russell at the moment. At the moment, it can all easily change.
Except Saudi Arabia qualifying. That's it. But apart from that, yes, he's been better than Russell.
Apart from Saudi Arabia qualifying and this podium.
Don't mention it, Jonathan. Why did you have to bring that up? It was unnecessary.
Matt, I think before we move on from Mercedes, I just want you to just explain a little bit what you were saying about unlocking that potential. So just to give hopium, I think is the common term on Twitter these days, just to give hopium to any Mercedes fans and any Hamilton fans out there, how close do you think they are to unlocking that potential and where might we see it?
How close are we? It's very difficult to say. But what I will tell fans of the team is that all of the predicted updates that we thought we were going to see haven't materialized. Instead, what Christian referenced earlier is we're seeing them adding sensor equipment to the car to fully understand the issue before they start spending time and development on new parts. So what I can say is when those parts show up, it's because Mercedes understands the issues and they know they have a fix for them. And when they do, what we're looking at is right now in the vicinity of probably 7 to 9 tenths a lap of pace. And understand, the car they did this with today is a car that's basically had no development since the first race, unlike the Ferrari, unlike the Red Bull.
So, Matt, is this like 2009 where a team would bring a huge package to a brand new rule set and all of a sudden they're at the front of the grid? If you remember, the opposite example was Toyota, pole positions at Bahrain and everything, two races later at Monaco, 18th and 20th in qualifying. Is this a season like that? Are we going to see that?
2000 and when? How good do you think my memory is? No, I'm joking a bit with you, obviously. No, I think if Mercedes understand the issue, they can build the parts to fix it. And if they build the parts to fix it, they're 7 to 9 tenths a lap.
P1.
Better than they are right now. And that puts them up with Ferrari, fighting with Ferrari and Red Bull for real on race pace and on quali pace. Will they understand it well enough to do that? We don't know yet. I'd certainly say Barcelona would be the big, if they don't have something by Barcelona, it's maybe a bigger design problem than can be fixed in a single season.
Well, they were due an upgrades package, weren't they, for this round? They didn't come.
Because they decided not to build the parts because they don't understand the issue yet. See, this is the order they're going in because their resource is limited. And that's why I say when those new parts show up, you know they figured it out.
Okay, so we've got a lot to talk about, and we do always, like, we limit ourselves. I know it's a rod for our own back, but we limit ourselves to a strict hour. So we definitely want to get to some of the Aston Martin woes, the jump in improvement for McLaren. Of course, the Albon stuff. I want to talk about tyre selection as well. But I feel like we do need to focus a little bit on Jono's trackside experience. What was it like at a Grand Prix? I'm so jealous. On the Patreon pod midweek, we went round, four of us, me, Alex, Chris and Matt, and I think we didn't even have to take our socks off to count the amount of times we'd combined been live to a Grand Prix. So first time at Albert Park?
No, probably 15th time, 10th, 15th time. Whoa, yeah, I've gone for many, many years. Yeah, yeah. Every single year I definitely go when it's available. Man, it's a race. Yeah. Like, I'm actually glad, and with no I'm not going to name countries, but I'm glad I go to a country where the race is actually awesome. They tried to make it, so it was very good, but they tried to make
France,
it like the,
I know, I know.
The Dutch Grand Prix was not a Grand Prix. That was Tomorrowland, basically. It was like a 500,000 people music concert with an F1 race in the background. Okay. They tried to do this pretty similar, but I'll tell you what, like, sold out crowds. Yeah, there were capacity limits. The Friday is the most people I've ever seen at a Grand Prix. It's Netflix, man. You got to put it down on Netflix, you know? I know it's the first race in 3 years there, but, like, I've never seen anything like it in over a decade.
Yeah? And how much could you... Where were you in the ground?
So what I normally do, the Friday I love, you know, it depends. Some years maybe you get grandstand. Some years you just get general admission. I'm not obviously lucky enough to know, like, all these super expensive companies and get corporate passes. And
You'll get there, young man. You'll get there.
I think 99% of those people don't give a stuff about F1, which is the actual devastating part for us fans and the listeners of MAP who want to get into the paddock, who will never get an opportunity in their lifetime. Anyway, the Friday I love to walk the track. What I did notice is that this is the first time in Australia they've had 60-minute practice sessions. Normally, with the 90-minute sessions, you're able to walk half the track for one practice, half for the other. Today, or Friday, you're rushing, you're trying to get to each corner quickly, and it's just a bit hard to do, but that was enjoyable. The turn 11, 12, I think it's turn 9 now, one of the best places in the world you can see a Formula One car at full speed. It's amazing.
Is that the left right. The left right before the final section. Yeah.
Incredible.
Carlos Sainz
Absolutely
corner.
Incredible.
Carlos Sainz corner. And the Kevin Magnussen corner, Denmark.
Don't mention it.
Get too cocky.
Yes. it used to be the Timo Glock corner until Sainz made a mockery of himself. It's awesome because that corner is like, what I found weird was the Haas was the only car throttling mid corner, and you can hear this stuff in person, you know, when you go to an F1 track.
Yeah.
For the race, for anyone who's never been to a race who's planning on going this year, if you don't have grandstand tickets and you're just walking the track, make sure for the race you got a screen, you got commentary, and that's all you need, you know? And then if you're allowed a track invade, bloody hell, get yourself down to turn one, get yourself to the main straight and absolutely get in the mosh. That's probably the favorite part right there, is running straight to the main straight and getting in the mosh with everybody. I think I was right in front of the podium. You might be able to spot me in you know, my handsome face or ugly face, depending on what you think. And the best part as well, another good part was after the race, just go to where all the drivers leave. You can do that in the morning where they all get into the track. Have a chat with anyone. You can talk to Crofty. You can talk to different people as well from the TV compounds. Awesome experience. Got to go to every race if I could afford it.
I wonder, so you said that turn, is there a name for that turn 9 left, right before the final section? Is there a name?
The Timo Glock Carlos Sainz tribute corner.
Okay, so I'll take that as a no, but I would...
In the slag, it says Science S's.
The Science S's. So what we should do, you and me, Jono, as a cultural exchange, is you come and sit and you watch them going through Maggots Beckett's, and I'll sit and watch it through that, because Maggots Beckett's as well is probably the other one people point to. And it is spectacular. You're just seeing the power and the change of direction is awesome. So I think I'll get the better deal with the weather if we do that exchange. But I'm glad you managed to get there to the track, and good vantage points. I found it frustrating because you only see your one part of the track. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you really hear the downshift. You hear the inputs way more than you see them even on the onboards.
I mean, Formula One's a TV sport, right?
Yes.
Like, you can't go there as a spectator and be like, oh, I can see the entire field and everybody, you know, all 10 football players. It's a TV sport. It's by far better to watch on TV. But to be there for a track experience, to walk around, see the drivers, see everything. You know, there are a lot of people I met who are just mainstream Netflix fans. That's not supposed to be condescending.
No,
it's
not.
True.
But it has.
That's why they enjoy the sport. Yeah, it's because of that. And they hated Formula One. before Netflix. They thought it was boring, and they probably still do when they went to the racetrack. But the point is, you know, when you actually experience and see it in person, you change your mind. You know, you got to be open-minded like that.
Yeah.
Get yourself to a racetrack, and not just F1. I know this is an F1 podcast, but there are a flurry of racing series.
I know. And I was a bit F1 centric, and then going along to a WEC event really opened my eyes quite a lot, and it blew me away. There is nothing quite like being at the side of the track, but my goodness, when it comes to watching it as a sport, it possibly is a bit better on telly. But look, let's move on, because we've got to play a game. Whose fault is it? Yay, we get a whose fault is it? And we have to go back to qualifying and back into Q1. And if you ever feel useless, remember, there is a person at Aston Martin who has to fit and clean Lance Stroll's wing mirrors, because he seems absolutely incapable of using them. Maybe it's not straightforward. Let's see. Does anybody put that incident in qualifying down to Latifi?
It's 50-50, I got to admit. Can I just add to that? It's 50-50. Yeah, yeah. Why is he overtaking him after he let him through, number one? But Lance Stroll, just remove the mirrors and make the car lighter. I reckon that's better, because he's never going to use
it. Just make it lighter.
He's really never going to use him, ever.
Christian.
I'm fairly sure he thought that Stroll was on a quick one, but it was very apparent when he overtook him that he was driving slow. So let's see if it was, okay, then I'm going to go for my one. But if you look at it from behind, He does unnecessarily close the gap in the corner. But, I mean, if he didn't knew he was there, it's hard. I don't know.
So let's get into Latifi's head. He got blue flags, Stroll approaching. Team on the radio, Stroll on a push lap. He does everything and a little bit more that he's supposed to let Stroll by at a reasonably good place. Stroll goes around the corner, and then he slows way down. Now, Latifi, he's supposed to be prepping his tires for his push lap. He's like, okay, well, Stroll has abandoned, so I'm going to go around him and get on with my day. This happens all the time. What doesn't normally happen is the driver that slows down then decides, oh, you know, I'm just going to drive over to the other side of the road randomly and hit the other driver that's going by me.
Was it the Patreon pod where we had the discussion about Stroll and that streamable clip that had been doing the rounds on Reddit, where it was like 14 instances of Stroll just crunching someone on the apex?
Might have been last Sunday's show.
It might have been last Sunday's show. But
yeah,
the thing that struck me watching that, and I was like, oh my, yeah, he does do that. And I remember all those incidents, is that the commentary team never blamed him. He didn't seem to get any penalties for them. Even when he crunched Albon at Saudi, Albon got the penalty for being crunched, and this is the first time he actually has got a penalty for doing it. So I'm thinking maybe race control found that Reddit post as well.
And I'm not going to be over patriotic about our podcast, but last year I did mention this at the final race, the season review, and we talked about it in the last race review. Map cutting edge reporting.
Okay.
We may be wrong, but we're first. We may be right, but we're first now. I'm telling you that much.
Yeah. So I think Matt, people have kind of, or race control have woken up to this particular issue. Stroll really does seem to have a blind spot at the apex where he just turns in and crunches people.
Yeah. Well, if you watched the world feed video, the shot from behind, it almost looks like he purposely turned in on Latifi and crashed him.
But I don't think it is deliberate.
I don't think it was deliberate either, but that's what it looks like. And I think that really got the steward's attention in a way that some of the others haven't necessarily.
Okay. I guess the last thing on this. Oh, in fact, we will go up to some of Stroll's other driving. But sorry, Canada, but your billionaires are having a bit of a shocker so far. You know, Latifi has basically caused a red flag or safety car in the last four events, or has been involved in it, even if we're not blaming him for this one. Stroll crunching people on the apex two races in a row. The billionaire club, when it was doing nobody any harm, I've said many times, I didn't mind Stroll in the end, apart from thinking it's a wasted space, because he kind of got on, he plumbed away, he was polite, he wasn't crashing into people. But at the moment, with this new generation of cars, the billionaire club is causing chaos, is causing havoc. So I'm wondering whether this new car, this new regulation car, is just that little bit harder to drive, and we might be seeing a regulation set that isn't going to suit the buy-in drivers. Jono, too harsh?
No, because remember last year that Haas was terrible to drive, right? And we saw Mazepin two corners into the season spin. Yep. Mick Schumacher about two corners later or whatever spin. These cars are difficult, I reckon. Yeah, they're heavier and they should be a little bit more stable, but the heavier is also bad. You know, heavier can be a bad thing. And that's a good thing because I remember five, maybe 10 years ago or something, the cars looked so easy. People were doing one-handed through a Rouge and they're like, how can we make these cars harder to drive? Well, we're kind of achieving them. They're sort of back to those Nigel Mansell dashing mustache kind of days where he's driving with, you know, such tough ability and Ayrton Senna through Monaco with one hand. That was brilliant.
Don't let Nigel Mansell hear you say that. He'll tell you the cars were on fire in his day. They had to put their own fires out and then restart them because that's what the regulations made them to. Matt.
Yeah, well, I think you are I think you're onto something. The cars are much harder to drive. But to me, the fundamental difference between Stroll and Latifi here is that Latifi finished today's race without crashing into anything. Mm. And he got no penalties. Stroll, I'm waiting to see a change in that behavior.
So yeah, if Latifi wants to bimble around at the back and cause no trouble, that's I guess that's less of an issue. Stroll, however, I think has something's changed in his approach. And I mean, he ended up shoving Bottas off track earlier today. Yep. Do we think that kind of move should be penalised? I think we were told that kind of move was going to be penalised, Christian. But ultimately Bottas moved out of the way, so there was no contact. And Stroll only moved into space that had been occupied. But if Bottas had held his ground, that's a crash.
When I had a thought, I did a note.
Nice, nice.
So I saw this thing happening and I was like, I think the way they've ruled so far was pretty good. So I wrote this, loving the new racing rules. Bottas Stroll left 43, restart, blah, blah, blah. And then I had to write, but why the verdict? Because that was point one. That was exactly what they were writing in the new rules. If you put someone off track, that's wrong. And he did that exact. And I don't understand what happened there because, something was wrong.
And I think the point is, as well, is to, if Bottas had just held his ground, I think there's no doubt, even if he'd just kept a little bit of the wheel on the track and Stroll had hit him, obviously no doubt that's Stroll's fault. And I think that would have been covered.
He did actually hit him, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
I think there was wheelbang. Yeah, there was wheelbang. Okay. But when you see it on board from Bottas, it was like, why is Bottas such a reserve driver? Why doesn't he do anything? But actually he did all he could.
Okay. Well, in that case,
knocked off.
All the more baffling then, Jono.
Yeah.
Well, two things. Number one, it's Valtteri Bottas. Did we ever see him really race in previous years? Number two, he's not really going for a world championship. There's no point proving I'm a tough guy in P12 or whatever it was, P10.
And it was for P10.
Him out.
It was for P9, yeah, I think, in fact.
It's for points. And so, you just have to sort of avoid the contact and be smart. You're in a team who needs every point they can get this season. That's why they've got an experienced driver. Mm. I'm actually very, very surprised that, I know Lance Stroll got the penalty for Saturday, but with all those 14 or so incidents where he turns in on people and all this stuff, I'm surprised they penalized Lance Stroll for that on Bottas and not the other 500 things he's done wrong.
Oh, you mean, they penalized him for the Latifi one, but they didn't penalize
him. For the Bottas one too. I'm actually surprised he got an actual penalty.
Oh, he
for
did
that.
Get a penalty. Oh, no.
Is that when he got the penalty? No. Is that for the weaving?
Yeah, the penalty was for the weaving.
This is the problem when you visit the racetrack and you don't know what the hell is going on for most of the race.
Well, glad you're here. No. So the penalty was for the weaving, and that's interesting in itself, Matt.
Oh, okay.
Matt.
Yeah, it is. He got 5 seconds for that and then proceeded to drive around and slow everybody down so there was no more racing in front of him, which was, admittedly, he was, and I use the word with capital letters, entitled to. But we had a very similar incident between Magnussen and Alonso that also that was investigated by the stewards and resulted in no further action. And there were two things about that I noted when I read the decision. One was that both drivers agreed it was racing. Alonso didn't say that was completely unfair. And the other is the way the stewards wrote about it. It seemed like Magnussen had passed Alonso out of turn 9, and Alonso had tried to repass him into turn 10. And as a result, the stewards expected Alonso would have to make allowance for Magnussen's trajectory into turn 10. The same thing may have been the case for Stroll. I did not see a replay of that one, though.
Yeah. That one, of course, I didn't, because obviously, as I told you, I was getting prepared to invade the track because it was towards the end of the race. But with the weaving on the straight, I do remember that now when he got the penalty. Is that the same penalty that Max Verstappen got on the final lap of Abu Dhabi last year when he won the world? Oh, no, he didn't get a penalty for that. Oh, sorry. Whoops.
No. So you're
they just started penalizing that now. Yeah.
So that's two different. That's two different things, I think. One is the behavior behind the safety car.
I should have said that.
We'll cover that a little bit more next week, I think. But no, this was specifically for the defending rules. And I think they haven't changed. On a straight, you can go all the way to one side to defend, and you can then go all the way back to the other side as long as you leave a car's width when you go all the way back. So you can claim everything on the first move, but on the second move, you must leave a car's width. And I think anything beyond that is also considered weaving as well. So Aston Martin, obviously having a very, very torrid time. Sebastian Vettel also losing it twice. Christian, he lost it in practice and also in the race.
I just wanted to mention the double pit stop.
Oh, yeah, from Stroll. Yeah, go on, yeah.
I think that needs a hats off because I love that. That was strategy numero uno. They could basically run to the end of the race. If Williams had done the same, Albon would have been further up.
And also,
kudos to... I'm sorry, you asked about Vettel.
No, that's fine.
But I do have a thing about Vettel.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, the guy hasn't driven the car. This was his first... I mean, and you could see it was so obvious. He has no experience. It's completely new for him. It wasn't a pleasant thing to watch, I think.
Well, he did do testing. And don't worry, we are going to talk about Albon next. I want to say this thing about Vettel, because he didn't look well. He was off for COVID. And as we know, COVID dissipates and affects people in different ways. So long COVID is a thing. He looked very much out of sorts. The dropping it in the race was so reminiscent of his Ferrari days. And he's made a couple like that now, Matt. Because I remember 2017, 2018, you were defending him, which is fair, and saying, you know, they weren't delivering him a car with a planted rear, which is what he liked. But he's made that same kind of error in the Aston Martin as well. And it's a mistake that we don't see a lot of other drivers making, perhaps a hangover from not having that double diffuser in the Red Bull anymore, where the rear was very planted and he was accelerating in that Red Bull where other people were still in the braking zone. But that kind of slow speed, getting on the power too early and losing it, that has dogged him now for the last 5 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, and if you think about it from a logical point of view, it all makes sense. He's been... How many races has he done? This is his first one, right?
Yep.
How much practice did he have this weekend? Oh, that's right. Almost none. Has he been sick? Yeah. So what do? You fall back on your habits in the race. I mean, it was amazing he managed to finish 18th in the single quali lap he got. I was pretty impressed with that, if I'm being honest. But it's not a surprise to me with a car full of fuel and zero practical experience and still recovering from an illness, that he would make a mistake like that. I would make the same defense as I made last time, which is, let's just see where this goes.
No,
let's
know,
give him a chance to like get back into it before we just put on our judgy pants and
say
he's terrible.
Look, we've got two hats on here. The one where we know that we can't make conclusions out of three races, let alone one race. And we've got the other one where we do see something and go, that looks worrying. And I will say, Jono, that he looked like a dad who had tipped up to an F1 race. And that's no offense to him. He's getting on a bit in sporting terms. He's got like three kids. Three, hasn't he? I think he's got three kids. Get a hobby, Seb. Get a Netflix account. Jesus.
So you're, you know, for the people with kids here, because I don't know what that's like, is that horrific. 1 hour less sleep a night for every kid that you have? Is that how it works?
Well, you might not sleep at all, but you know, he looks to me every bit. Like, okay, so look at Alonso, who's older and he's not a family man. He still looks hungry. He still looks driven. Yeah. He looks cut. He looks like he's a warrior. He's up for a fight. He would have won today if it wasn't for bad luck. He would have finished pole twice yesterday and won today with 40 points. But if you look at Vettel, he looks like a guy ready to retire, frankly.
So before this race weekend, I watched Australia 2019, which was the last time we obviously raced here. And Sebastian Vettel, I was like, oh my God, he's quicker than Leclerc. And oh my God, I forgot about this Vettel. Yeah. So that was the time. And I remember that segue now is five races later, or was Canada, or six races later. And since that Canada 2019 race where he got the penalty, he hated it. He's just never been the same. I don't know if he lost passion for the sport. He said it after the race. But since that race, something changed. And I don't know what, but something changed. And he hasn't been the same driver since that date.
Yeah, well, I don't want to make it any worse for Vettel, but as you know, part of my research is I go and I look at the championship standings in the drivers and constructors. And when I copied that to put it into the notes that we use, I kind of noticed that Vettel's not even listed as a driver. That was after the race finished today.
Hey, look, Vettel's got a lot of fans, you know, and I make no secret of the fact that, you know, Vettel was my baddie when he was a Red Bull. And in WWE style, he's turned and he's become like a goodie now. You know, like The Rock in the Fast and the Furious franchise, he started off as a baddie, now he's a goodie. To me at the moment, he doesn't look like someone who's on the up. He looks like someone, I don't want to say collecting a paycheck, but that is what it looks like now. And it is our judgy pants. And EJ in the live chat said, can we buy judgy pants in the MAP merchandising shop? Yes, you can, in a variety of sizes. Actually, we do have some Missed Apex merch as well. So go to missedapexpodcast.com and click on the merch tab. And we do have some things. We don't make a lot of profit from it. But if you do want a Missed Apex pillow or t-shirt, they are there. I will refresh them, but it is there. And you can go and help yourself to that. But I would suggest that if you wanted to really support us rather than just get a pretty t-shirt, you go to patreon.com/missedapex and see if any of those patron tiers appeal to you. Join us in our patron Slack group. You can also get extra content, me and Matt, twice a month. Just jump on the live stream and we just do a more relaxed extra episode where we kind of talk about our own stuff and some non-F1 stuff as well. And you can get an ad-free feed if you're listening to the podcast only version. And last chance to catch up and get a karting ticket to come and join us at Ella Park. That's in Suffolk, on the Suffolk coast. And you can join me, Matt, Kyle, Alex, Brad, Chris Catman-Turner, I think he's coming as well, and Chris Stevens on commentary, and Ellen as well coming down to race. We've got 47 drivers. We can squeeze a few more in as well. So go to missedapexpodcast.com/karting. Oh, also follow me on Twitter because I'm on like 9,991 followers. Get me to 10K. I need a win. Alban. That's where we're going next. Briefly, Christian touched upon it, and I know Matt is very impressed with Albon's performance. Christian thinks it could have been more. So Christian, tell us why it could be more, and Matt, tell us what impressed you.
I'm not going to tell you why it could be more. I don't think it could have been much more, but he could have missed that last pit stop. Was he seven or something like that? If he had done the same as Stroll at the start of the race. But I mean, that's so easy to say. The most amazing thing is when Williams arrived in Australia, they do like a prep with the drivers and stuff like that. And this is our estimated, this is where we think we're going to be. And they were certain it's going to be 19th and 20th. That's just for sure. It's not even going to be, forget about 18. So being in the points was just so overwhelming for everyone, I think, in the Williams team. And it's so deserved. And if anyone deserves it, it's I like Latifi. He's a nice guy, but he's not the best racing driver. Albon, on the other hand, he's both a nice guy and he's a very fast racing driver. And he's so humble about it. And he's so honest about it. And I love that. So kudos to Albon today. That was basically my driver and event of the day.
And I would agree with you. And as everyone knows, I am the person to come to when you need quick, snappy responses.
Give it to
us. Here we go.
It's funny because you're not that person.
No, not at all.
That's where the humor was derived from.
Self-deprecating, I think, is what they call that.
Go with it.
All right, fine. Be that way. So here's the thing. Albon, like Magnussen and Alonso, is on this hard tire to start strategy. And the safety cars are just terrible timing for them. They cannot take advantage of them. Because unlike Stroll, who was already at the back because he was, penalized and I don't know. Anyway, Doesn't matter. They weren't at the back, so taking advantage of the early safety cars didn't work for them. But the virtual safety car, lap 43, Alonso, Magnussen, Bale, Albon stays out, and now he's in seventh place with Ocon behind him. And the first amazing thing is for the next 15 laps, he stays. He loses 2 seconds to Ricciardo ahead of him on tires that are twice as old as Ricciardo's. So if I'm Williams already, I'm like, oh man, look at that. We've got actual real midfield pace. And whoever the strategist was that thought this up said, you know what? If he can drive that fast for the next umpteen laps, he'll just be ahead of Joe. And in fact, when he went into the pit lane, he was 20.1 seconds ahead of Joe. And that 80 kilometer an hour speed limit we talked about made all the difference. And finally, they thought, let's just put him on the soft tire so there's no warm-up. He came out 0.3 seconds ahead of Joe for the last points position out of the pit lane and stayed ahead of him around to the end of the race. And for me, that was just spectacular plan. I mean, like, to make that call and say, yeah, let's just bet it all on being crazy and going to the end of the race before we pit and having it work, oh, you just don't see that every day.
Okay. I want to get onto whether the overcut, undercut is better, because you talked about what the tyres are like coming out of the pits. But just to end this bit with, in our live chat, Vietse has said, would this have worked for Albon had there not been any safety cars? Is this what Christian was alluding to? That basically Stroll's tactic was hampered by the safety cars, whereas Albon's was made by the safety cars. Are we sure we're not over-egging what Williams and Albon achieved, as spectacular as it was, Christian?
Yes, Alonso and Magnussen did the hard tire as well, as Matt just said. And their strategy didn't work out at all. They were screwed by the safety cars and their timing. So when they pitted in the last third of the race, I think Magnussen came out last, actually. So, and they have to drive through this train. It didn't work on a normal strategy. It only worked because, yeah, crazy times, I think.
Okay, so what I'd like to do, if this is okay with everyone, is I'd like to move on to the podium. If that's all right. So overall, a Grand Prix, like an old school Grand Prix. And some people I saw not too impressed with the action on track. Probably a little either grumpy at waking up early on a European time schedule, or frankly blind drunk if you're in the Americas. And it wasn't the same DRS swapping. However, that, given the low expectations I generally have of a race at Albert Park, I felt was entertaining and intriguing. And more importantly, it gave us more clues to the puzzle of who is best going to unlock this 2022 season. Ferrari, to me, still feel like a team that have started well and are looking around in surprise that no one is catching them yet. They were celebrating this result hard. I don't think it was expected to dominate like this. I don't think they were expecting to be many, many points clear. I don't think they were expecting to have Leclerc with a 40-point lead. I think they are still bracing and waiting for Red Bull and Mercedes to catch up with them. But my goodness, are they enjoying it? Well, they have it. It's an intriguing season. It's one of the most uncertain seasons and openings we've had for a very, very long time in Formula One. And I'm very much looking forward to the rest of the calendar. Here on Mist Apex, we give out awards. The first thing we do is give out a good thing award. I'm going to start. I never normally start with the awards, but I'm first going for Perez's overtake of Lewis Hamilton. And I could extend that actually to how Perez and Hamilton race together in general. They have given us some good racing over the last couple of seasons. I think it even caught Hamilton out a little bit around the outside that he just went for it. And in the end, I think Hamilton saw that and went, oh, fair play. You know, fair play. Like, it's not worth defending if you're actually going to have the neck to do that. Especially when we saw the Danes and the Spaniard earlier in the race going off. That's a risky place to overtake. So I'm going to give Perez's overtake on Lewis Hamilton my thing of the weekend. Jono, thing of the weekend for you.
The event. going to the event, the fans, it was over 400,000, almost 420,000 people attended over the course of the entire weekend.
Hang on, you're one of them, though. So you're giving yourself thing of the weekend.
How is that even allowed?
Yeah, I know.
Don't say that. All right, everybody gets it except for me. I get a terrible award. you ruined it. I was going to give myself the bad award.
Sorry, Jonathan.
But yeah, that's it. Just for the fans, it was an absolutely great experience. Well done, Australia, as always. And the person who the actual good things I'm actually going to give it to for Sirius is. It's two things on the main straight. The person who lit up the flare, I'm not sure if that was caught on television. I don't condone lighting up flares, but it was exciting.
If the Dutch second can thing do was, it.
The second thing was the person who climbed the crash barrier and did about five shooies after the podium. Well done to that man as well.
When you said, well done, Australia, the whole of Baku just went, oh, that's our thing to say, well done, Baku. Christian Pedersen.
That was very Australian, though. I like that. My thing of the week, it could be any week this year, I think, but it goes to Ross Brawn and Nicholas Tombasius, Pat Simmons and Rob Smedley for basically taking this serious and the Liberty FIA, letting them take it serious and producing something crazy. It's a completely new car and they are maybe only half a second between them. It's amazing. I just love it. And kudos to those guys and the way this has all been handled.
And it's maybe the new regulations and the variety of approaches that the teams can take mean that when we go to different tracks and have different challenges, the different solutions change up the order as well. So at the moment, yeah, every new track we go to is another nod to the regulations.
Exactly, a new gift.
A new gift. Matt Durumpitz, you've got social media. You're at MattPT55 on Twitter.
That would be me.
Your friend on Facebook as well. You don't mind that? Search for Matt Durumpitz on Facebook too.
Not at all. I love having friends. Nothing better.
Friends are brilliant. As long as they don't come to your house. As long as you meet them at a neutral venue where they don't want to come to your house and use your stuff, I don't mind friends. What's your thing of the weekend?
Well, you already know what it's going to be because of how I talked about it on the show. It's the Albon thing. Oh my gosh. Williams scoring points. They're no longer last in the championship. But really, what's most exciting to me is that for whatever reason at this track, they showed actual real midfield pace. And no one thought they would be able to do that based on the first two races of the season. So I'm excited now that they're going to be some races where Albon and maybe even Latifi, I mean, you know, things can happen, might be mixing it with a midfield proper, and we're going to have even better racing as a result.
I'm happy to go out on a limb and say that it won't be Latifi, but if Albon can get in the mix, I'm being a bit negative on Latifi at the moment and Stroll, but I'm going to stick by it for the moment because that's how I feel, and I always tell you how I feel on Missed Apex.
Sounds like you hate Canada, Spanners.
It does, doesn't it? It sounds like I'm super Canada racist. But look, I will counter that. I go to all Ryan Reynolds movies. I'm there opening weekend. So I'm not Canadian.
Sounds like you are a girl.
I'm not a Canadian. Well, yeah.
You're a girl hating Canadians? What is going on?
I'll admit Ryan Reynolds blurs the lines. I'll admit that.
Right, true, very true, very true.
Let's do our Bad Thing Awards, which is the Missed Apex Award.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
This is where we definitely do put on our judgy pants a little bit, and I ask the panel to say what is their bad thing of the weekend, and it could be a person, it could be a Marshall falling over. Poor Marshall. But let's go to Jono first. Jono, what's your missed apex award this week?
Find me. I'm going to do two things again. I don't care. So here we go. Number one is...
You'll ride your scooter. You don't care.
The track invasion. Every year for over a decade, I get closer and closer to the podium. And I was about to set the record this year for right in front of the podium.
Nice.
But the marshal, we were at the only marshal post where they didn't let us through. We're on the main straight, like near one of the grandstands. And the guy's like, no. Like, we're not letting you through. And I was like, but the entire track of 50 million people who attended the Grand Prix are running on the track, but you're not going to let us through the one exit that is available on the main straight. And then eventually we made it through and I didn't break my record, but I got a good spot. That's number one.
Okay.
My number two thing is people with corporate passes or people who know how to get into secret areas of Formula One who don't give a crap about the sport. they can buzz off, all right, those people, because I'm sick of them. And that is a pure jealousy. Yes, I agree. But I'm going to speak on behalf, because I know all the MAP listeners of the Missed Apex podcast are vowing for me to say this. But we are sick of people with money and people with corporate sponsorships and everything getting in these sections. And we are diehard fans, and we will never have the experience of getting in these garages or getting in a car or getting in some of these experiences that these people get. Okay. Give us these experiences. I mean, I'm having a rant. It's annoying.
I agree with you, but I'm on slightly shaky ground because Estrella Galicia invited me as part of our Ferrari hospitality.
You're one of them. Sorry, one of them, Spanners.
And I'll admit, in the middle of the day, I did get a bit squiffy, and I had a bottle of beer in a place you're not meant to, which is like directly over the pit lane, and I got like told off and directed back in, and I looked around at like a wall of glass, and I didn't know where to go, and I had to like pathetically ask, like, which way is back to the place with the nice food and the champagne? So I think it's me that you're complaining about, Jono.
Sorry, mate. I didn't mean to do that.
Christian, who missed the apex for you?
I know this is off. You can't do this, but I'm just going to add this to Jonathan's. Without these people, it would be F2. So I'm just saying, you need those people if you want it at that. I know they're not the best, but that's just how it is, unfortunately. My thing of the week is basically Aston Martin. If you let your rich owner decide what's up and down in a Formula One team, you're going to fail miserably. And that is what we are witnessing here, I think.
It's not good, is it? It's not good. And is the driving force ultimately behind making the best Formula One team and making the decisions day to day that will get them up the grid? Or are the decisions motivated day to day by what is best for Lance Stroll? And unfortunately, like, if Vettel picks up and has a great season, then I'll withdraw and I take it back. But I have the feeling that we're watching, you know, Sebastian Vettel on almost a farewell tour, which is not the optimal for Aston Martin. And Lance Stroll is not a top class driver and is only there because his dad has bought the team. So that also might not be optimal for engineering, and might not be the easiest way to make a car. And I do get stick for Stroll hating every time I say stuff like this, but honestly, it's not like a personal vendetta. I just honestly believe he's not the correct driver for a team that has ambitions to go up towards the front of the grid. At me, if you want. Oh, at Spanners Ready. Come on. I'm the best one. Follow me. Jono, what's your Twitter before I move on? Because I never remember.
No, don't. Please don't comment on it. It's at JohnnyS8, JonnyESS8. We talk about this every podcast. Yeah. Every variation of my name is covered. And I'm not going to do one of those handles where it's like Jonathan Simon F1, because I don't just, do work for Formula One. There's so many different motorsports and sports and categories and different things.
Why don't you call it Jono Race Cars? And then it would be like, follow Jono Race Cars. Well,
because my career is not heading in just race cars direction. I want to start broadcasting basketball and different sports and getting into maybe non-sports.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there, because basketball is elitist crap for tall people. Okay, Matt, who missed the apex for you?
This is kind of a hard one because, well, Aston Martin is already taken, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm sort of on the fence between Sainz and Alonso.
Ooh, really? Oh, okay. Do Sainz, because mine's Alonso. Please do Sainz.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Mm-hmm. I'll take Sainz. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't rate him any less than I did at the beginning of the season. I think if there's anyone who's going to put up a serious challenge to Leclerc in the same team, it's going to be Sainz, because he's good at a couple of things that Leclerc has shown himself to be not quite as good at. But between the miseries of what happened to him in qualifying and the disaster of the race, which really came down to him just thinking the tire was fully switched on when it wasn't quite, it's been just such a massive setback for him. It's such a rare thing to see from him, quite honestly. It's a shock. So yeah, I think he and Ferrari a bit as well with him absolutely missed the apex this weekend, but I do believe they will probably sort it out for Imola.
No, okay, Matt, after the show, we're going to record all our ad reads like now, Well, your voice is like that before it goes back to normal and rubbish. My Miss Apex award, it does go to Alonso and the continuing Alonso PR. I mean, in a way, I love it and adore it, but it misses the apex for me because he just makes wild claims. I know that it had potential. I know that Alpine had some potential this week, but, you know, he's going, and even last week, we should have won that race and we should have won this race. We were going to be on the podium this week. It's an exaggeration. And, you know, and he always goes on about, you know, that would have been the best ever. This was my greatest performance. You can only use that line so many times, and he's definitely overused it. So for me, that misses the apex. Well, that is the end of our race review. You can't follow Christian Pedersen because he refuses. He's too cool for social media. So you'll just have to make do with looking
at... I'm on the Slack. Oh. Everyone can write me whatever, send their news on Slack.
That's good. Well, that's good. In that case, support us in our Patreon, patreon.com/missedapex, if only to speak to Christian in our Slack group, in our forum. And you can follow Jonathan Simon. Like, we're not going to make him repeat that terrible thing, but if you look in the show notes, the links to all the things we've talked about are there because of Matt. Matt puts them there. Follow him at MattPET55. Of course, follow me. I'm the best one at Spanners Ready, and join our Facebook group and stuff like that. Let me tell you what's coming up. We didn't get the opportunity to speak to Will Buxton last week on Tuesday, but we are rebooked to do it this Tuesday at 8 p.m. and we'll be doing that live. We're also going to, it's a really packed week, so no Patreon podcast this week. We're also going to catch up with Sean Kelly, who is our F1, the F1 stat man. He provides all the statistics to all your major broadcasters. Fantastic dude. So we're going to have a chat with him and probably put that out on the Thursday. And then on Sunday, we're going to drop in with Jules and Antonia for just a new show. And I think we'll probably invite Matt along to do that too. But wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.